Our scripture reading this morning is taken from the book of Numbers, chapter 13, beginning from verse 27 through the end of the chapter. Then they told him and said, "We went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan." Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." But the men who had gone up with him said, "We're not able to go against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants, and we were like grasshoppers in our own sight, and we were in their sight."
Welcome everyone who's here today, and we do have several visitors with us. We're glad you're here, and I want to encourage you, if you will, to fill out a visitor's card for us, especially if you've not done that recently. We would appreciate having a record of you being with us, but we're glad you're here. Kind of hold on to the thought that Ekong was reading for us there, and especially the idea of the giants, the descendants of Anak, and we'll talk a little bit about that in the lesson this morning. As you can see, is about David and Goliath. Let me mention briefly, Friday night, the Bible movie and discussion has become a favorite with several people here, and if you want to join in on that, do encourage you to come. This one is going to be the first of a two-part mini-series that came out about 30 years ago. We're going to talk about Peter and Paul, and of course focus on their work in the book of Acts and so forth. So if you want to be part of that, see Montel or Juliet, and we'd love to have you come over and join with us. Let's get into the lesson. I want to talk a little bit about David and Goliath. I know downstairs, somewhere in the last couple of weeks, you guys have been talking about Samson. And you've been talking about, of course, the story of Samson that involves a nation of people called the Philistines. And the story of David and Goliath very much discusses and talks about the Philistines. So let's start off by looking at them, a people who were a perpetual enemy of God. But let's also talk about this story that involves David and really our introduction to him. You know, the story of David and Goliath, it's endured as one of the favorites of all time. Every time I hear the phrase David and Goliath, I remember back to when I was a little boy, like some of you in here, and I can remember laying on my bed and listening to a little record, little 45 record, and that really dates me, but a little record where someone was reading and talking about the story of David and Goliath. And it fascinated me, as it has many young people, and many people for that matter. Here was the idea, and of course me, at that time, I'm very much scared of everything. I've talked about being a coward and so forth, and I was. And the bravery to go out and face this giant just intrigued me. And I always think back to that time immediately whenever I hear David and Goliath. So I'm taken back. It's a favorite story of many people, especially young people. You have the images of this little boy David, or young lad David. A lot of people picture him, you know, just like in the children's song, just a little boy named David and just a babbling brook or something like that, how it goes. But you see this young guy anyway at most a teenager, and he's out there wielding his shepherd's sling, and here's this great giant that's challenging him and so forth, and it just fascinates people, and rightly so. But I want us to look at this story and take some lessons from it. Now, again, as we talk about this story, it begins with yet another battle that's going on between the Israelites and what becomes their almost perpetual enemy. That's a little bit of a stretch, but their constant enemy, the Philistines. Some people would look at this and say, you know, nothing's changed. I mean, you turn on the news today and hear about the Palestinians and the Israelites or the Jews into it. And while that's not, it's not exactly the same people and so forth, still, it's an age-old enmity that exists between these two nations of people. And so it is in this story. Who were the Philistines? Well, they were a confederacy of basically five main city-states. If you're thinking about Samson, remember when they capture Samson and they take him, what is it, 1 Samuel 17? Judges 17. They take him down to Gaza. Gaza was one of those five city-states. In fact, the area of Gaza and just below the city of Gaza was the southern border or the southern territory of the Philistines. It ranged from there northward to what is not a major river, but the river Yarkon, or the Yarkon River to the north. And of course, the west, it goes all the way to the Mediterranean Sea. And there's no real fixed border on the east. I mean, it's constantly changing as they, you know, occupy a territory or take over a little village or a little city, etc. But no real fixed border to the east. So here's what we have when the Israelites meet them. And we're going to look at the Valley of Elah, or Elah. But every time I hear Elah, I think of the song, Elah, Elah, so I'm not going to go there. But anyway, the Valley of Elah, which lay between Gath, which was Goliath's home, and Bethlehem, which was David's home. Now, if you're looking at a map, this is sort of what it looks like. Pardon the river at the top there. I drew it in because I couldn't find a map I liked with the river. But anyway, the river Yarkon to the north there, and if you'll locate Gaza to the south, the Philistines occupied basically that territory. The eastern border changes and shifts. But basically this territory with these five cities, Ashdod, Ashkelon, of course Gaza to the south there, and then you've got Ekron and Gath. And in between, or to their east, lay the Valley of Elah. Now this is where they met, in this valley. And of course you will notice that it is between Gath, and that's Goliath's home, and Bethlehem, and that is of course David's home. So if you kind of that big blue blob to the right, of Bethlehem would be the Dead Sea. So if you're kind of getting in your mind, fixing in your mind where this is, that's where we're talking about. Now it was in this area that they will meet. That is, the armies of Israel and the armies of the Philistines will meet. But of course, the story doesn't end there. It goes on. These two armies meet in this valley. Now, this is a modern picture. If you just kind of look at this, this is modern day Valley of Elah. Not exactly called that anymore, but it's the same area. You'll notice it's a huge area. If you picture in the background, there are mountains, and this is being taken from an elevated, there are mountains on this side. And that's very typical for battles in ancient times. What you would have would be two armies would come together. Primarily, they would camp on the sides of hills or mountains. And a lot of times, they would be separated by a valley. And where they would actually meet and fight would be in the valley. And if you can kind of just picture that, they descend down the mountain to each other. And they would be meeting sort of in the middle or in this valley area. And so this is a modern-day view of the Valley of Elah. Now, as we're thinking about that, let's go back and notice some of what is said here. If you're looking in your Bibles, you might want to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17. I'm going to veer away from that passage a little bit, but not much. So you can really follow along the story this morning just by looking at 1 Samuel 17. And you'll notice It just begins by describing the area that we've just mapped out, so to speak. They gathered together, verse 1, their armies to battle. And they were gathered together at Shoko, which belongs to Judah, and pitched between Shoka and Azekah. And it just goes on to tell you, if you notice verse 2, Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by, again, probably on the hillsides there, by the valley of Elah. And they set, or they were prepared to battle. They made ready to battle their army against the Philistines. And the Philistines, if you'll notice, stood on a mountain. And so exactly what I was saying. They're kind of camped on the opposing hillsides, if you will. And you can see it there. They stood on a mountain on one side, Israel on the mountain on the other side. And there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp. Now enters a different phase of this story. There went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath. He was of Gath, as we pointed out, one of those five city-states. His height, very much debated, was 6 cubits and a span. Now, I'm going to come back and talk about that, but let's read his full description. 6 cubits and a span, roughly it's saying 9.5 feet or a little bit taller, 9.5 feet tall. That's a tall man. He had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, which would be like beaten metal and so forth. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. And mind you, that's extremely heavy. Okay, so we'll just say that. He had greaves of brass upon his legs, a target of brass between his shoulders. So he's wearing armor is the idea. The staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. Big, heavy stick would be the idea. And his spear's head, so massive that he even caused the weight of it. The spear's head is 600 shekels of iron. And he was bearing a shield, one bearing a shield, went before him. And he stood, and you can just see these two out. Now, they will separate themselves from the army, and he'll enter out there, probably up on a hill or whatever, but within easy eyesight of the whole army, standing there in this armor, standing there with this massive spear, etc., sword, no doubt, to match, hanging at his side, and day after day just issuing this challenge before the Israelites. Listen to it, verse 8. He stood and cried unto the armies of Israel and said unto them, why are you come out to set your battle in array? Or why are you prepared to battle is the idea. And he's mocking them with that. In other words, who do you think you are coming out here to battle us, the Philistines? In fact, am not I a Philistine? And you servants of Saul. Now you'll notice how he makes this personal. And if you look at it carefully, you realize he's making this personal between himself, who is the giant of the Philistines, and Saul, who is both physically and positionally as king, the giant of the Israelites. So if you stop to think about it, he's mocking them, but he's mocking them as giant to giant. And I'm going to read something very interesting here in a moment to kind of carry this further. But he says, am not I a Philistine, and you servants of Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then we'll be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you'll be our servants and serve us. And of course, he went on and mocked them and challenged them. Let's start asking some questions. Because there are several questions that immediately surround Goliath. And in today's view of looking at the Bible and being skeptical of it, you look at stories like this, well-accepted stories, and you begin to immediately run to some things that are natural questions. Now, there are some natural questions. First of all, who was this guy? He's not your normal Philistine, even though he claims to be one, someone would say. He can't be a normal Philistine. Even though he's from the city of Gath, who is he really? Is he some mysterious figure, you know, that's sort of been adopted into the nation of the Philistines? Some would pose all of that. Well, the Bible doesn't say that, of course. He says himself he is a Philistine, but who was he? And then there is the question, and this is the one that skeptics really run to, how tall was he really? I mean, was he, quote-unquote, a giant? And is it even possible, aside from some horrible disease, and I'll mention that in a second. Is it even possible to have an over 9 foot tall guy? Is that really something that's possible? And then finally, we know that David, and I'm getting a little bit ahead of the story here, but just to ask the question, skeptics would say, could David kill him with just a sling? Here's this, if we accept this massive individual standing here, dressed from head to toe, as your own Bible says, they would tell us, in armor, so that even if he were struck, even if you shot the guy, you pull out a .45 and shoot him, he's still loaded down with armor. So is it possible David could even kill him with just a sling? Let's try to answer some of these questions. First of all, who was he and how tall was he really? And can a man really be over 9 foot tall? I want to suggest several things to you. In the last 50 years, you get less skepticism about this story for natural reasons. He was a giant. We're going to look at a couple of biblical passages in just a moment. But I want you to be thinking in your mind, first of all, about sports figures today. I've lived now, over 50 years. And I've been watching sports over 40 of those years. And I mean watching them a lot. And I've noticed, just like a lot of you that are older, as time goes on, these guys get bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, it was very common when I didn't watch basketball much when I was a little kid, but I did watch it back in the late 60s and very early 70s, and it was very common to have guys that were 5 foot so-and-so on a team. And if you had a guy that was 6 feet tall, or 6'1", or 2, or 3, or 4, you had tall people. Wilt Chamberlain, at roughly 7 feet tall, was considered a giant. Now, a 7-foot tall guy is considered normal. 7'2", 3, 4, 5, 6, what are we saying? People are getting bigger. When I first started watching pro football, there were guards and linesmen at the time, who were in the upper 200s. They were nearly 300 pounds. And if you got a guy that was 300 pounds, he was huge. Now, guys, and you can look this up, guys are 340, 50. One guy is 375 pounds. And we're not talking about somebody that looked like I did about a year and a half ago, We're talking about a guy that is tall, huge, wide, muscular, and can move. People are getting bigger and bigger. So I suggest to you that it's the genetics that make it possible. In other words, when you ask the question, can a man really be over 9 foot tall? I want to suggest to you, and I'm just going to read a couple. There are many Old Testament passages that discuss giants. Let's read two. Look with me at Genesis 6. Moses, in roughly 1450 B.C., 1445 B.C., is writing Genesis 6. And as he recounts the condition of the world before the flood came, this is what he says. If you look with me at Genesis 6 and verse 4, and I'm just going to read the one verse. Moses says, there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that. I want you to catch that. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of men, and they bare children to them, the same became mighty men which were of old of renown. So what Moses is saying is right up until the flood, and that's my point. Maybe I wasn't making that clear, but that's my point. It's not just that when the earth was created, or shortly thereafter, and as some would say, maybe as some would look at this, 10,000s of years before the flood and before we look at some of the later chapters in Genesis. No, Moses is really saying that there were giants and they continued right up till the time. Now, what does that mean and how does that have a bearing here? It means genetically it is possible for a human being to be a giant. Now, turn back to the passage that Ekong read for us a moment ago. Look at the book of Numbers. Look at Numbers 13. Sometimes people will quibble about what's said in Genesis 6 and some other passages, and they'll say, really, when the Bible is saying giant, it really means that no, it wasn't tall, big people. It just means that these guys were, like we would say, a giant of a man. We might look at some great person, the president, Barack Obama. Or we might look at a leader, a CEO of a company, John Chambers with Cisco, or Jamie Dimon with J.P. Morgan, people like that. And we might say, that individual is a giant of a man. Well, they're not any taller or bigger, but they've achieved more. Look at Numbers 13 for a moment. What Ekon read for us, we won't reread it all, but notice how it is telling you that these were people. Just drop down to the last couple of verses and look when it says, verse 30, we'll start in 31. When Caleb is trying to still the people or calm the people, and they start objecting. And they said, the man that went up with them said, we're not able to go up against the people. They are stronger than we. I don't think they just mean they outnumber us, but they are looking at the people themselves. Remember that they've gone into this land and they brought back grapes, for example, clusters of grapes that are so big they have to throw them over a stick and two people carry them on their shoulders. They brought back huge specimens, and they brought back a report of huge specimens of human beings. Listen to verse 32 carefully. They brought up an evil report of the land that they had searched, the children of Israel, saying, the land through which we have gone to search it is a land that eats up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people that we saw in it, now notice, are not just giants of men, but they're men of great stature or men of great height. You go back and look at this term in the original, it's describing physical presence. It's describing how big. And there we saw the giants. And you'll notice verse 33, the sons of Anak. Now, if you follow that reference, and I would get you to go home and do this, look up the terms Anak or Anakim, which is the plural. And just note how it's always consistent that these people were giants. Now, what's the point here? The point is, the Bible is saying they're giants. And while we might be skeptical and say, you can't have people that big. Oh, but you can. We know that even if something just goes wrong with you, if your pituitary gland messes up, you can get a disease that's called gigantism or whatever. Robert Wadlow, I think was his name, Guinness Book of World Records, grew to be 8 feet 11 inches high. And we're talking about Goliath here at 9.5 feet. So roughly a half foot taller than the guy on record that's the biggest human being. Person says, oh, but he had a disease, and he was a very lumbering, and he wasn't a warrior. I agree with that. But think about, again, the sports figures. We've got nearly 400-pound people running around in football that can run very fast, maneuver themselves very good. They're agile. We have, 7'6", 7'7" guys. You think of Sean Bradley. For example, and some of you older might remember him in the NBA, 7'6", and he could handle the ball like a guard up and down the court. We're not talking about small people here. We're not talking about large, diseased people lumbering around, can't hardly walk. We're talking about agile, athletic people. Go back in time, can you have leftover from the time of the great flood and the time when people did grow to that height, as Moses is recording there, can you have some descendants of people that are still growing to great heights, big human beings, that over the course of time lessened in height, but now because of conditions getting better than they were, say, 1,000 years ago, when man kind of shrunk down to 5.5 feet tall, now commonly people are 6 foot and bigger, and even bigger than that, some select individuals. Could you have a select individual that's 9 feet tall? Well, the truth is, science is having to admit, yes, it's genetically possible to have a guy 9 feet tall. And no, he doesn't have to be a diseased individual. Given the right conditions, right food, right climate, etc. And he can grow to some incredible heights. I think we're seeing the evidence of that. So, was he a giant? He was a giant. Now, the next question, the last question in the skeptics, could David kill him with just a sling? Well, you know, the truth is, the sling is, as you come to find out, was widely used as a very effective weapon by ancient armies. Blow from a sling bullet, as they were called, could easily maim or kill an individual. In fact, there's a picture of a sling, kind of like the one David would have used. You'll notice it's got a flat piece of leather on one end, and it's got a hooked, that is a rounded, on the other. And basically, that's what you did. You hooked this thing on one finger or one part of your hand, and you grasped that flat with the other. And then it's got that pocket in the middle, and you put a bullet or a stone. Remember, David went to the brook, selected 5 stones, and put them in his bag. He's looking for round stones like this. Stones that would fly like a sling bullet should. And then you put that thing in the sling, and you swing it around. And you build up speed with it. Now, how far does it go? How fast does it go? How hard does it go? It's interesting if you begin to look this up. Think in terms, and I'll talk about Ridgewood Avenue here. Some are familiar with it. A lot of you are. If I went out here and I took a rock about this size, I mean, you know, about like that, and with all the might I could muster, I threw the rock, I'd probably get 4 or 5 houses out of it if I didn't tear my arm off. It's been a long time since I threw anything like that. A professional baseball player can take a baseball and the best, strongest arms can heave a baseball about 400 feet, and that's a lot. I mean, that's throwing it from the center field fence to home plate. And most of them can't throw it on the fly. So, again, how far and how fast will this go? You know that commonly, and we're not talking about the strongest, best arms or whatever, just knowing how to swing one of these things around. Commonly, people can throw a rock. Now think, best, strongest arms in the world are throwing a baseball 400 feet. Commonly, people throw these things about 1,200 feet. That's how much it extends your throwing ability. And we're talking about throwing at 1,200 feet so that it strikes what it hits. The world record is nearly 500 meters. That's over 1/4 mile. That'd be like standing right here, Percy, and throwing the thing to Mayovis. Okay? And you could drive down the street 1/4 mile, because that's about what it is. 1/4 mile. And the point is, now again, if you can throw it that far, what kind of impact, if you sling this around and you're standing, how far away would David have been? 10 yards? 20? In other words, would he have been 20 feet, 30 feet, 40 feet away from Goliath? Could he have been even closer than that? Goliath is standing there mocking him. Look at the story. You come out to me. Am I a dog? Goliath said to him. Is you're going to come out to me? You're nothing. You're just a boy. And that's, you know, it's like a joke that you're sending him out to me. What kind of impact? If you can throw a stone 1/4 mile with a sling, what kind of impact could you have at 30 feet? Could you hit someone in the head with a rock and kill them? If you've got that kind of power and you're throwing at a short distance? The answer is yes. And in fact, if you go back to ancient times, it was a very effective weapon and many were killed. There are counts all over the world. I mean, literally all over the world. The ancient American natives, the Oriental natives, etc., all use slings very effectively. So no question a sling can kill even a giant. Well, they came to this Valley of Goliath. What's interesting, and I'll point out something in this story that I find very interesting. The part, you know, we know the story. Goliath comes out here and he's issuing this challenge. And if you'll notice verse 10, I defy the armies of it. And incidentally, if you're thinking, we're only in verse 10, this is going to take all day. I'm not. I'm not going to look at the part of it really know so well. I'm just going to mention it. But Goliath is coming out here saying, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we might fight together. So here comes Goliath issuing this challenge. Now, what's going on here? It's interesting to me that in the Targum, and if you're familiar with that book, or if you're not, what that is a collection of ancient explanations, so to speak. A lot of traditions, a lot of notes written in margins, etc., etc. And we have copies of those. And here's what it amounts to. You don't know if this is just some guy's fairy tale, or if this is someone writing down in the margins of, like, 1 Samuel 17, what has traditionally been handed down. I want to read to you what the Targum says that Goliath went on to say. Now, you think about what he's saying here. I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we might fight together. This is what the Targum adds to the speech. I am Goliath, the Philistine of Gath. Notice, who killed the two sons of Eli. Now, 1 Samuel does tell us the Philistines killed him. Goliath, according to the Targum, is saying, I killed them. Hophni and Phinehas, the priest. And I led into captivity the Ark of the Covenant of Jehovah. Is that possible? Yeah, it's possible. Am I saying I know for sure it happened? No, but it is possible. He goes on to say, according to the Targum, that I carried the Ark of the Covenant and I placed it in the temple of Dagon, my God. Same temple, young people, Samson just pulled down, would have been rebuilt. And Goliath is saying he took the Ark into the temple of Dagon. And it remained in the cities of the Philistines for 7 months. Go back to 1 Samuel 4. I'm not going to do that this morning. And it fits. But here's where it gets interesting. Also, in all our battles, I've gone at the head of the army, and we conquered and cut down your men. This is what he would be saying to the Israelites. We laid them as low as the dust of the earth. And to this day, the Philistines have not... Now listen to this. Goliath would be saying, to this day, the Philistines have not granted me the honor of being chief of 1,000 men. But who had granted such an honor? Israel. And they had granted it to whom? Saul. And what is Saul? The biggest Israelite around. So what's going on here? Notice again what he said earlier. Verse 8. Am not I a Philistine, and you servants to Saul? Choose a man. What the Targum is suggesting is that he's saying, get that coward Saul, your giant, to come out here and face the Philistines' giant. And we know he's not going to. And he's doing this day after day after day. In fact, the Targum closes out by saying this, if he's a hero, referring to Saul, let him come down himself and fight with me. But if he be weak or a coward, then you choose out a man that he may come down to me. Now, we know what happens in the story. He continues to yell this for 40 days. I defy the armies of Israel. And, of course, Saul doesn't meet the challenge. I mean, regardless of whether the Targum is correct, Saul doesn't meet the challenge. He just remains back in his tent. But David does. David's dad, Jesse, sends him to visit his brothers who are with the armies of Israel. You know the story here. Take some food. Go see how your brothers are doing. All of that kind of thing. And David does. And down in verse 12, David begins to hear. I mean, Goliath's coming out morning and evening. You see that verse 16. So he's coming out every day, morning and night. And so David begins to hear this. And what about this? What about this Philistine out there who continues to challenge God's army? Now, you notice, with Goliath, the emphasis is me, me, me. The emphasis is, I'm a giant, I'm a giant. With David, if you read this story, the emphasis is never David. The emphasis is always God. And in fact, even when Saul wants to arm David, and you know the story here, put on the armor of Saul, and naturally, it's going to be way oversized, and it's almost comical to think of how this would have looked. I can see David standing there, you know, probably sword dragging the floor, you know, I mean, maybe the breastplate going down halfway down his thighs. You know what it's like when you put something on that's way oversized? And David's like, I can't go out there like this. But the truth is, I've got a sling. And when a bear came to kill my father's sheep, And when a lion came to kill my father's sheep, I went out and God delivered the bear and the lion into my hands. And God delivered this giant into my hands. And when he went out to meet Goliath, he told him, I don't come to you in my own strength. I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel. Notice what he says to him, whom you have defied. You haven't just defied the armies of Israel. You've defied God. You're out there, you're standing out there saying, no one can beat me. And buddy, God can beat you. Because the battle is the Lord's. And that's what he tells Goliath. In fact, when they meet, and they do. And again, think of that sling can throw a rock maybe a quarter of a mile. And I picture it's about like that. Goliath standing there with his, you know, his shield bearer beside him, standing there with his spear, standing there with his massive sword, probably literally half as long as David's whole body. Standing there saying to him, am I a dog that somebody like you would come out to me, and laughing at him. And David pulls out this sling, shoom, 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 like that. He's got the helmet on. But his forehead and his temples are vulnerable. And when you can throw a rock like that, a bullet, literally out of a sling, it hits him. And the Bible, of course, says it hits him in the head, the forehead, and he goes down. He's mortally wounded. And as David had told him, and David said to him, this day, notice, not I, the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you. That's the idea of the sling. And I'll take your head from you. That's the idea of taking Goliath's own sword and cutting off his head. That you may know, and that all the earth may know, that there is a God in Israel. The battle is the Lord's. Or as we sing, the battle belongs to the Lord. This is a wonderful story. And skeptics look at it and say, what a ridiculous story. A little boy carrying a slingshot out there against a 9.5 foot tall guy. Is it a ridiculous story? Could the biggest NFL player stand next door to your house, and if you were adept at a sling, shoot a rock at him and hit him in the head, what would it do to him? You'd see that massive guy crumple, just like Goliath crumpled. And you could then go up to him and take a sword and cut his head off, and yes, David killed Goliath. The battle belongs to the Lord. Never underestimate the power of an individual who has God. There's not a strong enough, tall enough, big enough person on earth to defeat such an individual. If you're here today and you're not a child of God, you don't know that strength. You don't know that presence in your life. You can leave here today with God on your side. You can leave here today in the strength and the power of the Lord. If you believe in Jesus, that He's the Son of God, and you'll confess that, and you're willing to repent, to change your life, and live your life for the Lord, trusting in Him, being confident in Him, as David was in the story. And if today you'll be baptized, because you know that's what He says to do, to have your sins washed away, you'll be forgiven of everything, and you will leave this place a child of God. Maybe you're here today and there's something in your life that's not right and you want to correct that and put it behind you. The Lord is a merciful God. Percy talked about that in the Lord's Supper. God is a very merciful God. He wants to forgive. He's gone to this great length to forgive us. Won't you please come while we stand and sing?